It has been the pleasure of the National Broadcasting Company to bring you Sammy Kaye's Sunday Serenade, featuring his world-famed swing and sway music. The poem read by Sammy Kaye was When We're Apart by Wilson Derren. Today's broadcast has come to you from our studios in Radio City, New York. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
From the NBC newsroom in New York, President said in a statement today that the Japanese have attacked the Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, from the air. I'll repeat that. President Roosevelt says that the Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor in Hawaii from the air. This bulletin came to you from the NBC newsroom in New York.
The White House also reported today an simultaneous air attack on Army and Navy bases in Manila. This report followed the President's declaration that all Army and Navy bases on the island of Oahu in Hawaii are now under air attack. This bulletin came to you from the NBC newsroom in New York.
Now back to our regularly scheduled programs.
Here is what has happened. President Roosevelt phoned Secretary Early half an hour ago that the Japanese had attacked Pearl Harbor, the United States naval base on Oahu Island in the Hawaiian Islands. A few minutes later, he again phoned Mr. Early and told him that planes had attacked Manila. This means that war is underway between Japan and the United States. President Roosevelt's announcement of Japanese air attacks on United States Pacific bases staggered London, according to a dispatch just received. And London now awaits Prime Minister Churchill's promise to declare war on Japan within the hour. This has come to you from the NBC newsroom.
Honolulu. A naval engagement is in progress off Honolulu, with at least one black enemy aircraft carrier in action against Pearl Harbor defenses. This bulletin from the NBC newsroom in New York.
Henry L. Stimson today ordered the entire Army into uniform, executive effective tomorrow. His order applied to every one of the Army's 1,600,000, including the thousands of officers and men on duty in administrative posts in the War Department building who heretofore have been permitted to wear civilian clothes. In Norfolk, Virginia, Colonel Charles B. Borland, Norfolk Director of Public Safety, ordered the arrest of all Japanese nationals in the strategic naval center of Norfolk today as soon as he learned of the Japanese attacks on the United States Pacific bases. Washington again. The White House announced at 3:35 p.m., that's Eastern Standard Time, that the Army had just received word that an American vessel, believed to be a cargo ship, had been sending out signals of distress approximately 700 miles west of San Francisco. Whether it had been torpedoed was not immediately learned. Long Beach, California. Rear Admiral Charles A. Blakely of the 11th Naval District today issued orders shortly after announcement of the Japanese air attacks in the Pacific, requesting all officers and men attached to the district or vessels of the district to report to their stations or ships immediately. The district embraces Southern California from San Luis Obispo south to the Mexican border and all of Arizona and New Mexico. For the latest news on the Pacific situation, keep tuned to this station.
United States Ambassador to Britain are conferring tonight. They met a short time after President Roosevelt's announcement that Japanese planes had attacked Hawaii and the Philippines. The British government previously had served notice that it would declare war on Japan within an hour of any such declaration by the United States. But there has been no declaration of war as yet. The Secretary of War has just announced that all military personnel on active duty is to appear Monday in uniform. For the latest news on the Pacific situation, keep tuned to this station.
Back to our regular program.
11 o'clock, WEAF, New York. Good evening, everyone. This is your RCA Victor Overseas reporter, George Putnam, with the latest Associated Press news from all parts of the world. V-225 is a symbol that designates the visible evidence of RCA Victor's greatest achievement in the phonograph radio field. The V-225 is the finest RCA Victrola phonograph radio you can buy. A Christmas gift to leave the fortunate recipient breathless with its magical beauty and convenience, including all of the latest phonograph features, plus RCA Victor's famous radio with electric tuning. But above all, it has a spectacular feature found in no other instrument in the world, the Magic Brain Record Changer that plays records on both sides without turning them over. So be sure to see and hear the V-225, V-225 at your RCA Victor music dealers, the merchant who specializes in the gift that keeps on giving. The flame of ruthless war is burning clear around the world tonight, set off by a wanton Japanese surprise attack on American Pacific outposts from Guam to Hawaii and on shipping off the continental coast of these United States. The first blow fell with staggering suddenness, yet it was of such scope, reaching across thousands of miles of sea, that some definite strategic design in Tokyo must underlie it. Just what that design is cannot yet be discerned. Presumably, it is an attempt at diversion to aid European Axis mates, but it may be intended to screen some major Japanese military movement against Russia or China or Britain, screen this movement from American intervention until it's too late. Tokyo's announcement of a war declaration was a declaration after the fact, a declaration that came after the bombing of Pearl Harbor and other Hawaiian targets and the torpedoing of an American ship 700 miles west of San Francisco. It removed all possibility of a Japanese military party coup to checkmate peace moves. It also changed Japan as irrevocably to the wheels of Hitler-Mussolini war juggernaut as it seals British-American mutual aid pacts. Unquestionably, the Japanese action sweeps away the last of American hesitation or uncertainty as to national policy. There can be no turning back now from the grim business of smashing the tripartite axis, both in Europe and in the Far East. It has struck first like a thief in the night. The Japan's diplomatic negotiators in session with Secretary Hull in Washington when word of the Japanese bombing raids came were stunned by the news is clearly indicated. Tokyo guarded its real purposes, even from its own peace emissaries. They've been cat's paws of Japan's dominant military regime. Their real mission, unknown to them, must have been to gain time for a stealthy sea deployment for the Pacific attacks. They were sent to lull American watchfulness into a false security against attack while those meaningless conversations went on. This is the story of December 7th, 1941, a day that will long be remembered. At dawn, United States Army bombers and pursuit planes roared in the air soon after the word reached Manila of the outbreak of hostilities between Japan and the United States. Early dispatches indicated no casualties in the Japanese bombing of the Philippines. Later, this gave way to hopes that there were no deaths. A broadcast by NBC from Manila said that flying units of the United States forces had taken to the air, presumably to battle Japanese attackers. Japan presumably struck a harder initial blow at the Hawaiian Islands. The War Department gave the White House a preliminary estimate of 104 dead, more than 300 wounded in the army alone, as a result of Japan's bombing of the island of Oahu. Neither figure included civilian casualties in the raid on the principal island of this Hawaiian group, Oahu. Late today, Governor Poindexter of Hawaii advised the president that heavy damage had been inflicted on life and property in Honolulu. At least one Japanese aircraft carrier was in action against the Pearl Harbor naval base. The White House announced at 6:08 p.m. that the Navy had just reported a squadron of unidentified planes over Guam, a tiny dot in the Pacific between Hawaii and the Philippines. And a little later, the president received dispatches saying that Guam had been attacked. The Japanese also struck at Shanghai, then sank the British gunboat Petrel off the waterfront, then sent their troops into a section of the international settlement vacated by United States Marines just a week ago. The United States gunboat Wake, lying not far from the Petrel, suffered no damage, but a pro-Axis radio station broadcast the Japanese forces had raised the flag of the rising sun over the United States gunboat. A blackout has been ordered tonight at Sitka, Alaska, site of a United States naval air station. A blackout of the Canal Zone and Panama also has been ordered. At this hour, Japan is engaged in war with more than half the population of the world. Her declaration includes the United States and Great Britain. And tonight, the lineup of nations joined against the land of the rising sun was bolstered by more declarations. Declarations of war by the Dutch East Indies, Canada, Panama, Costa Rica, Nicaragua. Great Britain's House of Commons has been called to session, presumably to declare the empire's formal intentions. Our own can be expected as soon as the necessary wheels of democracy have been set in motion. President Roosevelt is meeting in an emergency session tonight, right now with his cabinet. Later, he's going to meet with leaders of both parties in Congress. No news from that conference as yet, but it is believed that Mr. Roosevelt is preparing a message to Congress, a message that he'll probably deliver in person tomorrow. Here's more on that story. Both houses of Congress will meet tomorrow at noon. Senator Connally has just announced that the president will address Congress at 12:30 tomorrow afternoon. The cabinet meeting didn't begin on time because of a traffic snarl on Pennsylvania Avenue. Cars were driving bumper to bumper in front of the executive mansion. Crowds of spectators pressed their noses up to the iron fence around the grounds. Secret Service men around the White House have been augmented. Extra police from the Washington force are helping out. Mr. Roosevelt decided on the special cabinet meeting after a talk with his War and Navy secretaries and the Army Chief of Staff, General Marshall. In advance of the meeting, Presidential Secretary Stephen Early announced that the conference would emphasize international affairs rather than military strategy. Our national capital went on a full war basis within an hour after receiving word of the Japanese attack. President Roosevelt ordered into effect detailed plans long prepared for the emergency, which came so suddenly. Uniformed guards in steel helmets and armed with rifles were placed about the War and the Navy departments and the other key posts. Both the War and the Navy departments ordered all officers into uniform immediately. And on this subject, the Navy Department has asked us to make a special announcement. Effective immediately, all naval personnel, including Coast Guard and Marine Corps, will wear uniforms at all times while on duty and when traveling in government conveyances. Civilian clothing may be worn at home or during recreational exercises or when traveling by other than government conveyance. The Federal Communications Commission has just placed special restrictions upon all international communications pending establishment of government censorship. Further operation of amateur radio stations in the United States, its territories and possessions, is prohibited. At the same time, the Navy announced that censorship has been placed on all outgoing cablegrams and radio messages. No other information was disclosed about the Navy's plans. However, Brigadier General Alexander Searles, Director of Public Relations for the War Department, told reporters, "Now we are at war. As far as publication of military information is concerned, all responsibility stops." The Army's news chief said, however, that he and his associates would do their best to get the news out as rapidly as is humanly possible. Congress was quick to comment on the explosion in the Pacific. Most of the legislators freely predict that Congress will adopt a declaration of war without hesitation if the president requests one. Such vigorous critics of the administration as Senator Wheeler of Montana, Representative Fish of New York, are calling for unity. Says Wheeler, "The only thing now is to do our best to lick hell out of them." Fish, for his part, says he will make an address in the House tomorrow calling for a united front in support of President Roosevelt. Chairman May of the House Military Committee says he favors an immediate declaration of war. Chairman Walsh of the Senate's Naval Group says that the nation must quickly meet Japan's challenge. This is the general reaction by our congressmen. In the wake of Japan's attack in the Pacific, our nation has become a united front tonight. North, south, east, and west, all sections of the land are taking actions designed to maintain order and prevent sabotage. With the entire Pacific coast on a virtual war basis, Mayor Rossi tonight declared a state of emergency in his city of San Francisco. Rossi demanded an immediate halt to all strikes. Air raid listening devices have gone into action at scores of Southern California defense factories, alert for any sign of an air raid. Here in New York, all foreign shipping has been canceled. The Coast Guard has doubled its patrols against possible sabotage. Offices of the two Japanese newspapers located in the Times building have been closed. All operations orders suspended. TWA, American, and United Airlines have refused to transport any Japanese national or any person suspected of being a Japanese national. Mayor LaGuardia, in a broadcast over these very facilities earlier tonight, assured all the people of New York that every necessary precautionary measure has been taken. LaGuardia, who is also National Director of Civilian Defense, ordered all Japanese subjects to remain in their homes until their status is determined by our federal government. This ruling is now in effect in many states. LaGuardia also called on civilian air raid wardens and auxiliary firemen to stand by to wait for orders and be prepared. And that certainly seems to be the theme of this nation. Be prepared. The die has been cast. The people of America are ready. Immediate and vast expansion of the nation's armed forces is regarded in military circles tonight as certain. It is believed that one of the first steps would be to call all enlisted reserves to active duty. This would mean a return to Army posts for those Selective Service trainees who recently were discharged from active duty because of being past the age of 28 or for other reasons. With a declaration of war by the United States, men in the age bracket between 28 and 35 registered under the Draft Act would be liable for immediate call to training. In a story almost buried in the welter of special bulletins of the Japanese affair which we've been receiving tonight, we learn that the CIO has won a tremendous victory. The arbitration board, which had been studying the captive coal mine dispute, has reached a final decision, a 2-to-1 vote in favor of a union shop in the mines. Thus, the CIO's United Mine Workers Union gained the objective for which it had been fighting. Here's a bulletin. Singapore, Monday. The Japanese have landed in North Malaya. It was announced officially today. The America First Committee will, of course, support the war if Congress declares a state of war. This has just been announced by General Wood, chairman of that committee. Wood said a special meeting of the America First Executive Group will be called Tuesday. And now for the very latest news from overseas, as heard at the NBC Shortwave Listening Post. The Panama radio says that a Japanese aircraft carrier was sunk off Honolulu today. At least 350 men were killed in a direct hit on Hickman Field, Hawaii, according to NBC's own observer in Honolulu. The Air Force of the United States Army of the Far East has taken to the air, according to NBC's observer in Manila. Manila itself has not been bombed as yet. A Berlin radio commentator says that President Roosevelt's warmongering policy, which reached a culmination last week, has now led to military clashes between the armed forces of Japan and the United States. That is the reaction from Berlin to the Japanese declaration of war on this country. According to an NBC broadcast from Honolulu, the USS Oklahoma was set afire in today's air attack on Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. The London radio says that large German tank forces are now astride the main road leading from Moscow to Tula, that the situation in the Moscow sector remains serious. The London radio has just issued a report that Singapore has been attacked by Japanese planes. The Panama radio has broadcast a message to all reservists and other members of the armed forces to return to their posts immediately. Russian troops have undertaken landing operations in the Crimea on the southern front, but the Red troops were effectively repulsed by German forces, according to the Berlin radio. The Moscow radio says that the Russian advance from Rostov has attained a depth of 50 to 75 miles, that the Reds are still making progress. That was the very latest news from overseas, as heard at the NBC Shortwave Listening Post on special RCA shortwave equipment. Late flashes in just a moment, but first, for the present with the future, shop at your Victor record dealers, a store of magic for any age, any taste. Home of Victor records and RCA Victor radios and phonograph radios. If you would give the best, there's RCA Victrola V225, the finest RCA Victor phonograph radio that money can buy, with a magic brain record changer that plays records on both sides without turning them over. Less expensive, of course, but just as great a value is RCA Victrola V135, a splendid table model with an automatic record changer, jewel point pickup that eliminates use of needles, and a fine radio with built-in loop antenna. Splendid gifts, both ensuring lasting remembrance for the giver. Remember, too, to ask your dealer about the new Victor Music Card, the giant greeting card that holds the gift record of your selection. This year, shop in record time at your Victor record dealers for the gift that keeps on giving. Victor Records and RCA Victrola phonograph radios. Singapore. Two bombs fell in the center of Singapore today, and a number of others were heard to explode in various parts of the island. And here are some special announcements which the War and Navy Departments have asked us to bring you. The 2nd Corps Army Area Headquarters here has revoked all leaves and furloughs, has ordered all men to report to their posts. It is desired that permanent and temporary military personnel of Mitchell Field return to that field at once. All Navy personnel in the 3rd Naval District are requested to report to their ship or station as soon as is possible. All Marine Corps recruiting offices will be open tomorrow morning at 7:30. The recruiting division of the United States Navy announces that its recruiting offices will be open from 8 a.m. tomorrow. Here's the weather forecast. Tomorrow, fair and cold. Later Monday, increasing cloudiness. The temperature is 31. Tune in WEAF again at this same time tomorrow night, 11 o'clock, for your RCA Victor Overseas reporter with the latest news from all over the world. George Putnam speaking. Stay tuned to this station for the latest news bulletins.
This is the National Broadcasting Company. WEAF, New York.
General Douglas MacArthur has ordered all women and children in Manila to evacuate the seacoast and move to areas inland. The Dutch East Indies has just declared war on Japan. Costa Rica in South America has also just declared war. A bulletin from New York. Mayor Fiorello H. LaGuardia, Civilian Defense Director, announced tonight he had ordered all Japanese nationals in New York City to remain in their homes until their status is established by the federal government.
If in crushing Japan, the United States will weaken herself and drain off much of our strength and of our materiel to the West, then Hitler will have won a tremendous trick. Happily, that strategy is an open secret. And now, here is Robert St. John again with a short bulletin, which he's just brought in.
Here's a bulletin from Singapore. It's been officially announced that the Japanese landed in North Malaya. The invaders are being engaged. There are also reports that a Japanese aircraft carrier has been sunk. But these are roundabout, unconfirmed reports that come to us from London and Panama. Now, about that Singapore bombing, it's reported now that only two bombs fell in the center of the city, although others were heard to explode elsewhere in the island. Now back to John Vandercook.
One point occurs to me, Mr. St. John. Japan now is at war, technically, with more than one-half the total population of this globe. Against 450 million inhabitants of China, against 500 million inhabitants of the British Empire, against 137 million inhabitants of the United States of America, against 60 million people in the Dutch East Indies. Now, those are impressive figures for a nation of 70 million islanders in the North West Pacific Ocean.
Thank you, gentlemen. You've heard a summary of today's events and comment on the future from John W. Vandercook, Robert St. John, and NBC's Observer in the Nation's Capital, Borkert. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
The National Broadcasting Company, over its combined networks, brings you a special defense message from Mr. Lin Yu Stambaugh, National Commander of the American Legion, concerning the Legion's stand in the present crisis. Commander Stambaugh arrived in the nation's capital a few hours ago by plane and will speak to us from the NBC studios in Washington. His subject, the Legion again answers the call. Mr. Stambaugh.
Thank you, Don. Tonight, the United States is faced with war. United States territory has been invaded. Bombs have been dropped on United States military and naval establishments. American citizens and American soldiers have been killed. War has been declared on our country by Japan. At this time, I speak with quiet pride for the more than a million men and women of our country who are members of the American Legion. As their national commander, I speak in their name. And when I say that in this black hour of crisis, the American Legion answers the call. At 4 o'clock this afternoon, I landed by plane at Washington Airport with other Legion officials. Our first act was to call the White House. The American Legion, in that telephone call, assured the President of the United States that although most of us have been in civil life since the end of the First World War, the President of the United States is still our Commander-in-Chief. At the same time, assurances of the American Legion went to the Secretary of War, Mr. Henry L. Stimson, and to the Secretary of the Navy, Colonel Frank Knox, that the Legion is ready to place its entire resources at the call of our country. We are ready to a man and to a woman to serve where our efforts are most needed. We of the Legion represent the men and the women who put forth the manpower and the willpower that won the last war. Since that time, we have constantly asked for and encouraged a strong national defense ready at all times to repel any enemy. Ours has been the one voice which refused to be stilled in all the years since 1919. we sponsored the National Defense Act of 1920, the act under which our country finally began to build its defenses only some 2 years ago. We urged compulsory military training more than 20 years ago. We did not urge these things because we wanted war. The Legion has always wanted peace. Now, war has come. And now that war has come, now that war has been forced upon us by brutal invasion of our territory, the Legion still wants peace. We now know, however, that the only way to get this peace is to accept the challenge with which we are faced and to decide the issues of that challenge once and for all. This will require, first of all, national unity. A unity of thought, a unity of ideals, and a unity of effort. In pledging this unity for the American Legion membership, I believe that I can make the same pledge for every patriotic American. I believe that I can pledge every American to a phrase in the preamble of the Legion Constitution, a phrase which declares that might shall not be the master of right. This means that we, as Americans, must temporarily and voluntarily put aside some of the rights which we hold most dear, in order that we may protect that more precious right of Americanism. In fact, from this day until our danger has been finally erased from the earth, Americanism should be the only ism which any patriotic American can uphold and at the same time uphold the security and freedom of our nation. All controversy as to why we have been placed in our present situation should be forgotten as we follow the lead of our government. Perhaps even more important, all ambitions of labor and of industry to make gains as a result of this emergency should be gladly set aside. At this time, none of us should consider himself as an individual in the ranks of either labor or industry. Now that war has been forced upon us, we are Americans and Americans only. Americans who know no right but the right to protect the homes and the land that a good and just God has given us. It is for our land and for our homes, our families, and all the institutions which we have enjoyed. It is for these precious things that all our energies should be gladly offered. With this in view, with our existence at stake, no patriotic American has the right to strike, whether he be striking against capital or against labor. No longer can any patriotic American ask himself how much he can gain as an individual. First of all, he must ask himself how much he can sacrifice in the interests of us all. That should be our national watchword, sacrifice for country rather than gain for self. If any American doubts that he will be called on to make sacrifices, let him consider this fact. We are now opposed by brutal powers who are devoting their entire economy, their entire substance, their entire manhood to the accomplishment of world conquest. This world conquest is being aimed at a single achievement, an achievement so simple that any child may understand it. This achievement is the establishment of a principle of slavery through force. The powers which now oppose us place no value on human life. The lives of their own people hold no value to them. They are willing to sacrifice countless lives of their own people we may be sure that any sacrifice of American life will bring them only gratification. As National Commander of the American Legion, I speak for a membership which has seen war. I speak for men and women who know what war means. I know myself, for I saw it overseas in the last war. Speaking for the Legion membership and for myself, I feel it my duty to tell you this fact, that human life means nothing to the power which this day has launched upon us the brutality of war. In short, we must be prepared to sacrifice not only individual gains, we must be prepared to sacrifice life itself. Yet I speak also for every member of the Legion when I tell you that we go forward without fear, knowing the things which face us. We Americans are ready to meet them. We are ready to meet force with force, and with all our efforts dedicated to the task of making that force ever greater. If we of the Legion can bring you any lesson from what we have seen of war, it is this. There is no bravery greater than that which is armored with the spirit of right and of justice. We Americans have the spirit of right and of justice as our armor, and for that we may well thank God. Yet in saying that we do not fear, we can also say that we do not underestimate the power of the enemy who faces us. We are faced with an enemy who has been at war in training for war for many years. The totalitarian powers long ago converted their entire nations into schools for war. They prepared for war while we Americans lived in peace. Every American knows these things about the enemies who face us. We know that they are without humanity and without mercy. We know all these things and more. But one thing we know above all, we know that Americans have never refused a challenge to protect their liberties. All of you, within the sound of my voice, know that we shall not begin to refuse to accept that challenge now. And you know, as I know, that Americans go forward without fear, despite the magnitude of the task which confronts us. In speaking for the American Legion, I am sure that every loyal American now listening will join with me when I say to the enemies who have invaded us, on this day, you have made the gravest mistake in all your history. Yes, I am sure that every loyal American now listening will join with me in that statement. More than that, I am sure that every loyal American will join together to prove that statement. Up to now, our country has engaged in a defense effort greater than any in its history. But from now on, that defense effort of our recent past will seem puny indeed. For now, at last, Americans are fully aroused. Now at last, we are united by attack from without, by a common enemy, an enemy who has boldly sent over his bombing planes, his submarines, and his warships, and unleashed a bloody attack without any warning and in all violation of international law and the law of humanity.
We interrupt for a special bulletin. A telephoned bulletin from an NBC correspondent in Manila informs us that the Pan-American base in Guam has been bombed. A telephone bulletin from an NBC correspondent in Manila says that the Pan-American base in Guam has been bombed.